Is this thing still on? All right, welcome back to another episode of the Angels Cup Coffee Hunters podcast. It's been about 18 months since our last episode. I lost my amazingly talented and essential co-host, Brian Gaffney. It took me a long time to realize that a perfect replacement for him was probably right under my nose the whole time. It is my co-founder of Angels Cup, Abby Salazar. I think I'm sort of a little bit technical and nerdy when it comes to learning about coffee. I think having a co-host like Abby brings some heart and soul to the show, which is an absolutely essential component. It also took an amazing guest to bring us back for our 12th episode. Our guest today is Steve Cuevas. Steve is the 2017 Cup Tasters, U.S. Cup Tasters champion. He is the roaster for Black Oak Coffee, and he's been a huge proponent of Angels Cup ever since the beginning. So today is the first time that I actually got to speak with Steve, and this was it was a great conversation. We got to learn a little bit about who Steve is, and of course, learn some tips and tricks for becoming better coffee tasters ourselves. I hope you'll enjoy our revival episode. Without further ado, here is Steve. All right, welcome back to another episode of the Angels Cup Coffee Hunters podcast. I'm here with my brand new co-host and co-founder, Abby Salazar.
Hello!
And our guest for the day, Steve Cuevas. Is that how I say your last name?
Yeah, Steve Cuevas.
Steve Cuevas. Awesome. So, in an effort to embarrass Abby as much as possible, I'm going to let her ask the first question.
Okay, so your biggest claim to fame is being in the 2017 U.S. Cup Tasters Champion, yeah? But walk us through your resume so we can see what your other achievements are.
So as far as awards, after my first year of roasting, I ended up winning 2 gold medals at the Golden Bean. Shortly after, that's when the Cup Tasters happened, and I won that one. And then about a year after all that, we come back with a Golden Bean overall win, and then we also came back with about, I believe, 8 medals from the coffee competition. America's Best Espresso was thrown in there. And so those were kind of all the wins. And then there's handfuls and handfuls of just attempts. So I did Brewers twice this year, and I did not the best, but I improved each time. And then I did Roasters the 2 years in a row. And again, I improved each year, but somewhere in the middle of the pack or a little bit higher towards middle.
We're going to dig into the Cup Tasters and focus on that mostly, but can you tell us what the Golden Bean competition is?
So the Golden Bean is a competition started in Australia, and so they have like thousands of entries. It's kind of like astounding the amount of entries and the amount of cafes that enter this. And so Sean, one of the organizers of it, started the North American Golden Bean competition. So it's basically roasters send in their coffees, and it's a roasting competition. So you roast for single origin, espresso, you do blends, and you have franchise and small companies. And so there's 2 different leagues too as well. And there's some public tasters, and then there's some tasters that are within the industry. And so we evaluate it and we judge them, and then we hand out medals according to blind tasting that everybody participates. And I believe the year that we won the overall, it was about over 800 entries.
Oh my God, that's a lot.
And it's actually more people are submitting more and more as this is going to be their 4th year, I believe. Either their 4th or their 5th that they're on.
Where was the competition at?
Both times were in Portland. So it kind of happens in Portland.
Nice. We're going to do our own roaster competition.
Nice. Oh, I know. I saw that. I'm still waiting for that all to drop and happen.
Yeah, we had some trouble getting our samples out to the first batch of roasters.
Okay.
I think everything went out, and so we're waiting to hear back from everyone about which coffees they liked and want to compete with.
Yeah, it's super exciting. Just like there's a San Francisco Bay Area. They changed their name to the Bay Area. What is it? Bay Area Roasters. Oh, I forget the. It's basically barf, is what Bay Area Roasters Friends. That's what it is. And then we had a little bit of an in-house roasting competition, and it's always just kind of fun. To me, I just kind of take it as it. You win some, you lose some, but it's always kind of nice to like see where you rank amongst other people. And when you have like really high competing roasters, it's just kind of a fun little game to play. Just because, brew water and all that stuff and extraction, your roast could be better, but it can extract worse if not done right. But yeah, that one's always fun to do anytime you can have same coffees or just a competition of sorts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, ours is going to be the most chaotic of all because it's going to be us sending samples from the roasters out to our subscribers and them sort of rating and reviewing each coffee. So it's going to be total chaos.
Yeah, but I feel like you're doing a really good job about how it's kind of set up, because a lot of times we kind of just been having the conversations about these roasting competitions that we all get the same coffee. And so you're kind of like, well, if everyone's doing a really great job, then you have a really tight grouping of points. And so it doesn't really accentuate what the roaster is doing. But if you're able to, like we were just discussing, that you get a bunch of different coffees and then the roaster has to choose to either go single origin or blend them. And then you that's more of the craft of roasting as opposed to like everyone gets the same coffee. So I think you're onto something neat. So this is going to be really fun for everybody involved.
Oh yeah. I'm glad you feel that way. We actually chose to do it that way because we want the coffees to actually taste good. I know for roaster competitions, sometimes it's just like whatever beans is not really the focal point. But we want the customers who are going to end up tasting the coffees to get four coffees that they like. So.
Nice. Yeah.
But yeah, it works out for the roaster too. It gives them a real chance to show off something that they're proud of rather than just something they're doing for the competition. So it's a win-win. Okay. So before we jump really into the interview, I know that you're an Angels Cup subscriber.
Yes.
I was wondering if you have any feedback for us on our tasting notes.
Oh, like the descriptions that you actually get?
Yeah, so the cards have my notes. The app has the roaster's notes. I'm kind of curious to know, being that you're a world-renowned coffee taster, what you think about the notes we send out in the box, if you think they're accurate, if you think they're kind of silly.
I didn't even know that the app had like a different setup.
Yeah. And so,
yeah, that's interesting. I didn't know if it's mentioned anywhere else. I just know that we do the card ones, but the cards are accurate. So it's always kind of really good to see them.
Ooh, so we're accurate then. Not crazy.
I think it's super awesome when you guys know a lot of them. And I think you guys also nail a lot of ones that maybe people wouldn't want to use as descriptors, but I think that you have a little bit of a prosumer base, and so you're able to maybe give them a little bit of a more in-depth or more a different adjective. Like for us, when we're doing it for our consumers, we're kind of like, well, I don't really want to put something they might not know what it is, some sort of obscure fruit. But I think you guys kind of nail it with putting whatever needs to be on there.
Yeah, Abby's, she was born in the Philippines and she was raised in Guam. So she knows a lot about obscure tropical fruits.
Yeah, and for us, John, one of our bosses, has like a crazy palate. Keith, our other boss, so we have two owners here, he's really good with his palate too. So it's always interesting to kind of like, between the cards and both of them, I'm just kind of like, I don't even have to know what it tastes like. I just kind of evaluate based on score and stuff like that. So I consider myself not being the strongest palette as far as picking out what exactly it is, but I can kind of differentiate what is or isn't there. I don't know if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think it's really hard if there's a specific flavor. Like, there's no way I can describe lychee in a different way. Like, it tastes like lychee. Like, I don't know what other words to use for that. So that's why we have to use those types of fruits. And,
I would just use peach juice and fruit.
No, but that's funny too, because John used that word too. And when he said that first, I was like, ah, there it is on the flavor wheel. What? Now, what is it? You know?
Mm-hmm. There's a hint of peach and a lychee flavor, but there's something about it that is just lychee. Like, there's nothing that you can use for that.
Every fruit's that way. Like, how would you describe a peach to somebody, you know?
Right.
Like, what does it taste like? It tastes like a peach.
It tastes like a peach, yeah.
That's like when people first drink coffee. It tastes like coffee.
No, it's not.
I still feel
like, well, you can like peach in particular, you can be like, you go by the weight of sugar. Is it like light sugar, heavy sugar? And then you kind of go tropical flavor, acidity, like, and so you kind of go into all the points of what would describe it, but it's hard to describe what is flavor. Mm-hmm. His name is Tom. He's our newest addition to our roasting team, but he has a degree in organic chemistry. And so when we talk about flavor, it's been like, I kind of know that flavor in particular is a chemical response on your tongue. Your tongue has receptors and they taste chemicals and what those chemicals translate to your brain. And so there's no really like, it's absorbing into your tongue and palate. You're literally just having chemical reactions.
Yeah.
And so like his understanding of what is flavor, like you'll see him, like if we taste a coffee that has tons of blueberry, he'll literally be looking up for the compound that is the blueberry flavor and then seeing how it's in coffee and where it's at, how you know, what level does it degrade at different temperatures. And he's out of control with what he's thinking and doing as far as roasting.
Oh my god, you guys have like an insanely diverse team. No wonder why you guys are so good.
Yeah, well, this year adding Tom added, I've been knowing, like we've been knowing that water is going to be one of the best pushes for us in roasting and doing anything in competition, but we're so bogged down, like everyone wears multiple hats. And so we're reaching like the maximum of what we're able to achieve in amount of time. And then just adding Tom was just kind of like, okay, we added like another 40 hours to the work week so that someone can do something.
Yeah.
And so it's been super awesome.
That's nice.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to hiring some employees of our own.
One day.
All right, so let's dig into the U.S. Cup Tasters Championship. So first of all, you were the winner of the U.S. Cup Tasters Championship in 2017. Looks like this year's competition is happening next week. Are you competing?
Yes. Due to the fact that I won last year, I'm able to defend. Okay. And so I end up starting in the first round.
Nice. What does that mean?
So it's the first round, there's going to be about 30 plus people all competing, and then it's going to go, and that's going to be on Saturday, and then it's going to whittle down the top six, and then it's going to go to the semifinals, mm-hmm. and then from the top six, they're going to have the top three in the finals. So you're going to have, like, if whoever winning is going to have to cut twice on Sunday. And so they'll go to the semis and then they'll go to the finals and the top three. And then from there, you decide who's going to be the winner of it.
Okay. And can you give us like a quick, 30-second rundown of what you're actually doing in the competition?
Yeah. So what we end up doing is we get sets of coffee. Each set is three coffees. Two of them are identical. They're the exact same coffee. And then we have an odd cup out. And so what you have to do is taste all three and differentiate which one is the odd cup. And then pick that cup up and then place it over the line to signal that that's your choice. And then you do that 8 times in each competition or in each round. And then whoever has the most right takes the top. If there's a tie for the number of right, then they go to time. So time can play a factor. If everybody's doing 8 correct, then they look at the time, and whoever does it in the fastest time ends up being the top person.
Is it typical that when you get to the final rounds that everyone's getting them all correct and it's just a matter of how fast you do it?
Last year, no. Actually, our semifinals, we did, I believe we were like 7 for 8, like the 3 people. And then on our finals, I kind of felt like it was a little bit over extracted. So as we drank them, my tongue kept drying out. And so it wasn't as easy. And so I think I ended up winning that one with like 6 out of 8 or 5 out of 8. I can't remember, but I just remember knowing that we did not hit 8 for 8. But watching the world's finals, the like 4 rounds were 8 for 8 top, like 12 people, and I was just blown away by how accurate they were.
And how different are the coffees?
You know, from what I heard in the regionals this year, due to the fact that I was in the finals already, and if I did the regionals, I would be not be able to be in the finals, so I wasn't able to. But we had our other roaster, he's in the finals. He went to Reno, and he was just kind of like, he had the same impression I did, where it was, they're obvious. They're just obvious. And it wasn't too of a tight grouping, you know. It wasn't like other 2 Colombias roasted a little bit different. It was like, in his mind, it was just kind of like, oh, they put a Kenya up against a Central America. You know, like it was that simple for us.
Okay. Is it like that in the finals, or does it sort of ramp up?
In the finals, I felt the same way where there was some easy ones. So I felt like they threw in 3 easy ones, and then the next 5 were like little thinkers. You had to sit there and like think about it and not really sure. I know, you know, coming off actually missing them, so obviously they were more difficult. But I feel I was a little unprepared. I feel a little bit more prepared for it now. But I think, 3 easy with 5 tighter groupings.
What do you actually do to prepare? What's your routine like?
You know, it's interesting. Everyone kind of has their own little different thing. Like I've heard people months at a time stop eating spicy food. They start only eating bland stuff like rice bread, only drinking water. Me in particular, due to the fact that I didn't think I was going to be even in the cupping competition the first round, I ended up just doing nothing different. We were right now, and even the same thing's happening now, where our coffee is turning over. So we're like searching for new coffee. We're also searching for our monthly buyers club. And so we're literally cupping about like 25 to about 50 different coffees every like 3 times a week. And so just cupping. And not with triangulation in mind, just for, you know, being able to discern different qualities to pick up for our coffee program. So that's what I do. I know, you know, some people prepare with triangulations, but it's was interesting that Samuel from Keffa Coffee, and like we had a good conversation about like you can't prepare for that because you don't know the grouping of the coffee. You don't know how difficult or how easy they're going to make it. You could potentially make it really difficult on yourself to do your trainings, but it may or may not help out. And so to me, I just kind of saw it as I don't put extra time into the cupping, practicing and gearing up for it. So it's just kind of go through my everyday and just cup.
Do you think that with you trying 50 coffees, every week at work helps a little bit more with the competition? Because that's a lot of coffee.
I think so. I think like also hearing like people being like, I'm only going to eat bland food. I'm all like that, you know, to me, I always tell people that's kind of like being, all right, I'm going to like lay down for the next week and then I'm going to go to the Olympics. And
like I'm like,
Yeah, like it's interesting. You're like, well, I would imagine that like when I won the championship, we literally stayed up like to 2 or 3 in the morning. We were just eating different foods, like fancy restaurants, drinking different wines, like French wine is kind of, or like old world wine is kind of some of my favorites. So to me, I was just like, you know, I feel like what I'm doing is just really challenging my palate to taste at all times, as opposed to trying to be, let me not damage it, or, you know, like you should be able to taste it a lot of things.
I just finished reading a book called Work by Bianca Bosker. And she quit her job being a tech journalist for a year to become a sommelier. And so she went around meeting with all these different people in the wine world and people who are preparing for their master sommelier exam. They do a lot of the same weird things where they'll stop eating spicy food. Some people stop brushing their teeth. Some people.
Oh my God.
That's what they do. That's weird. Some people will not eat all day long because they think that when they're hungry, they taste things better. So there's a lot of funny little tricks that people use to improve their
taste. That sounds like a mental thing, like because you're hungry, food tastes better.
Yeah, I can imagine like if your mouth is watering, like you're going to really pay attention to the way something, the first thing that hits your tongue, you're going to pay attention to it.
Yeah, I can maybe understand that a little bit. That would also be like maybe there's nothing on your palate, and so you don't have to taste through like if you just, you know, ate a cookie. Because I know sometimes we'll be doing things and tasting like I'll be eating a cookie and then they'll be like, oh, here, try this coffee I just made. And I'm always just joking. I'm like, ooh, I get hints of chocolate chip.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so sometimes you put your palate with something else, and so maybe that's what they're trying to do. But yeah, I think a lot of it is mental. What I tell a lot of people is like, you do what works best for you. Like my routine is not going to work for you, but I think a little bit of the goal is to let me explain what I do, and if it's helpful to you, go for it. If it's not, you keep doing what you're doing.
So then it's safe to assume that you do brush your teeth in the morning before the event.
Yeah, I do. I have a routine. So I wake up, I brush my teeth, I use some mouthwash, and then here's the trick. I end up making like a breakfast sausage sandwich. And so this is my understanding on a like why I do it. So when you brush your teeth, you're adding soap to your tongue. And so that those soap like actually changes how things taste. So if you ever brush your teeth and then go into work and drink a coffee, you're like, I can't evaluate this, you know, without being a little bit influenced by what's on my tongue. Soap. And so my thought is all that like the sausage and all that will adhere to the soap and then basically cleanse my palate and be able to taste again without having, because to me, like, eating the breakfast sandwich and then drinking coffee, I can taste, but brushing my teeth and then drinking coffee,
I don't know why that is. That happens to me too. Like after you brush your teeth and then you drink the coffee, when we're doing coffee tastings, I can't taste anything.
Yeah, it's just the soap.
It tastes minty or, you know, like toothpaste. It's really odd.
Yeah, for like a few good amount of sips way later.
Yeah.
And so
you have to eat like something or like get settled with whatever before you can really taste the coffees.
Yeah, exactly. That's why I do it. I mean, I did that for the championship. And again, I didn't do stellar on it, so it's not like everyone go out and buy a breakfast sandwich, but it was just kind of like my routine. And again, I think routine is more important than, you know, it being scientifically proven, like, you know.
One of the things in the in Corkdork, sommeliers, when they're sitting for their exams, they sometimes have, like, a reference wine. They'll have, like, a sort of a standard, you know, California Pinot Grigio. That's just, like, a baseline wine that they always drink before their tastings. So they sort of clean their palate that way.
Nice. I mean, that makes super sense, actually. To me, whenever I do like cuppings and like, let's say I have 20 single origins on the table, by the time I get to like coffee 4 or 8, everything is just kind of acidic, bright, juicy, like not very differential in what they're tasting like. And so I kind of have either on the back bar in our company sample as well, like a darker roasted, either a French roast or a medium dark roast, because it kind of like everything is such on the bright high end that having that French roast or that dark coffee will put it in contrast. And so I take a sip of that, kind of swish it around my tongue, let it darken the notes on my palate. And then when I taste the light origin again, everything is just more vivid and pops. So I sometimes, if I'm doing a lot of single origins, I do have a reference coffee, but not reference as a baseline, but reference as in like a low tones if I'm tasting a lot of high acidic coffee. And it works vice versa too. So if I have a bunch of dark coffee, you're just like a bunch of milk chocolate dark notes, I will have like a little bit of a bright to kind of help balance it out for me. And I feel like that works for me. I'm not sure if anyone, I mean, you know, if it works for anybody else or if anyone else does it, but it sounds like the wine industry does it.
Now you guys cup a lot of coffees at one time. I thought we were really cool for like cupping four at a time, but 20 like on a table is hard.
Oh man, it's interesting too, because when I went to, what was it? The Roasters Retreat, we were talking about cupping and there was two people that they mentioned. I can't think of what the second company was, but one's in Canada and the other one is the Starbucks. So the QC for both of them, their quality control person, ends up cupping about 500 to 800 cups a day. And, you know, obviously they're not cupping for nuances, but they're cupping like for quality. So they're saying, is this the same as our base coffee? And so they'll literally, someone will set up 800 drinks or cups for them and then they just run through them.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I know, I thought that, and that, I felt the same way where I'm like, wow, we're doing like 50, we're crazy. And then someone tells me that story, I'm all like, wait, 500?
Oh, yeah,
okay.
That sounds like a curse.
Yeah.
You know?
Welcome to hell. I can't imagine. I feel like your tongue gets saturated after, you know, just a few cups. I feel like there's no way I'd be able to confidently, even if I had the taste buds, even if my taste buds were strong enough to do it, I feel like 500 cups is just impossible. So I guess you said you clean your palate with a different roast coffee sometimes while you're doing a tasting. Have you ever tried like cleaning your palate with just water?
I do. I used to do that when I first started cupping, and then I just kind of felt like it diluted what I was able to taste.
Mm-hmm.
And so instead of making things more intense and vivid, it actually just kind of made it less intense, but not like by a whole lot, just a little bit. And so it's kind of like when I washed my tongue, then everything, the coffee has to re-adhere to the tongue. And then that first sip that I just took was kind of more of a primer. And then I had to coat it again with the coffee for flavor.
Right.
So if I did do it, I would just need to drink more coffee. And the way I do it now, I just kind of concentrate and focus, and I don't rinse palate between coffees unless it starts to, or it's too many single origins or too light, too bright. But I normally just go through it straight without trying to, you know, drink water in between them.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
So what has been the weirdest tasting note or flavor that you've gotten in a coffee?
Oh, man.
Like anything weird or unusual? Have we had anything that's unusual?
I mean, yeah. As far as like maybe faults or as in positives?
Either one.
Startling, I'd say.
You know what? The more interesting one is when going to Roasters Retreat and or even the barista camps and you do defects.
Yeah.
Oh, you get bombarded with like four or five different cups of like weirdness. And, you know, most of the time you won't ever taste some of these defects. But like if you've never had chlorine.
Yeah.
It's super interesting. If you haven't had mold faults, that's also another one. Like, I think one of the funny stuff is whenever we find, like, if there's a fault in something, we all kind of go, oh, look out for cup 3B. Do not drink that one. It has chlorine. Everyone's eyes just kind of look at it and go like, I want to know what that tastes like. And that the next thing they're doing is drinking this coffee. Because, you know, you got to create a lexicon and you got to create a positive and negative one. So we've drank stuff where I'm like, oh, this is not great, but I need to know.
We actually did have a chlorine one once.
Yeah, it tasted like the swimming pool.
It tastes like bleach. And is it when that happens, does it usually affect a whole lot or is it just a few beans? Because we brewed it again. Like the roaster said, oh, no, you must have been something on your end because our coffee doesn't taste like that. We tried it again and it didn't taste like that the second time.
Yeah, that could be like what we call cup to cup variation. Mm-hmm. And so like if I set up, you know, if something like that happens and you taste chlorine and you're deciding to purchase this coffee, we normally do two samples. And like, let's say one of them tasted like chlorine. What we would end up doing is then on the next round, we would put out six samples of the exact same mm-hmm. coffee. And if it pops up again, more than, you know, like it's two of the six cups have chlorine or three of the three, that's not a positive sign. But if none of them have it again, then yeah, maybe a bad bean got in there or, you know, but if it's more prevalent, it'll happen a lot as you just widen your cupping on that one sample.
Yeah, it makes sense.
We've had barnyard ones are pretty common though, right? Like one that tastes like horse poop.
Yeah.
I don't know if a lot of people get that.
I love that tasty note because that's one that I hear a lot in wine, barnyard.
Yeah. I don't know how else would you describe that? It tastes like a barn.
Yeah.
Well, you know what it's like whenever I drink goat's milk tastes goaty to me. I don't exactly know. Like if I hang out in a pen of goats, the pen, that's what it tastes and smells like to me. And so it's always interesting that people are like, oh, I like goat milk or sheep milk. And so I'm just like, oh, I can't do it.
Yeah.
Steve, how would you define good coffee?
Ooh, you know, that has changed for me over the last 3 years. I've been doing coffee for about like 15 years, but in particular, I feel my attitude towards coffee has changed. And the biggest influencer was Cat and Cloud in particular. You know, the first year we won the Golden Bean, the second year we're competing again and we're doing great. And then I want to go check out some people I really admire, Chris Baca and Jared Truby, and I can't think of the third business partner, but I go check out their coffee shop and there's some people I really admire. And so then I go there with the premise of evaluating the coffee that they're preparing. And I end up seeing all their customer interactions. Chris Baca was there and just seeing like how everybody was left, you know, they were smiling ear to ear, super happy. And it hit me. I was like, you know, when we focus on quality of coffee, we're only focusing on points, what the coffee tastes like. But in reality, we're cafes and we're an experience. And so it, you know, I got to see that an experience is much more better than points. You know, I come from I'm originally from LA. I lived in San Francisco, and those two places, the people who live there market themselves. They're very brand conscious of who they are, what they are, and how they're perceived by people. And so I've kind of always had that in mind, in the back of my mind, like, oh, I can't do that in public because then I will ruin my reputation. And so to me, it started turning into how we brand ourselves, how we make an experience for the customer ended up now is more of a focus for me than trying to be like, let's hunt for that 93-point coffee, 99-point coffee, as opposed to like just trying to make people feel really happy once they walk out those doors. You know, your goal is to be like, can't wait to get back to that coffee shop. And so I think now that's my attitude towards coffee.
How do you do that? How do you put a smile on someone's face?
Oh, I don't know. I'm not that person. No, I'm just kidding. I don't tell them that their cappuccino doesn't come in 20 ounces. You know, I think the ability to listen is going to be the biggest one. You know, I have two really great examples at our coffee shop. One is her name's Lexi, and the other one is Mackenzie, who's actually our production manager. So she's moved off bar, but I would be working with them, and I would be like out of the side, you know, I'd be listening, and I would hear them putting up with some nonsense. And then they'd just be like, okay, that's awesome. And I'm just like, I'm really bad at customer service, but their customer service is so on point and they're so caring and listening that I'm just kind of like blown away by how they do it. I've even asked them, well, how do you do it? How do you listen to somebody's story that is just going nowhere? And then they don't know, they just do it. And so to me, I was just kind of like, those were two people I really looked up to for giving great customer service when I knew I'd give up if it was my.
That is like a hard thing for roasters, I feel like, trying to balance out being really into the quality of the coffees and like finding coffees that score high and having a coffee to serve customers that's, I guess, universal, that people can still relate to so that they're happy when they get their coffees at your cafe. Like,
can you give me a specific example of maybe what a customer was saying that was insane, or how Mackenzie or the other girl responded to it?
You know, a lot of the time is as a customer service person, you greet people with an open-ended question like, how's your day going? And then that allows sometimes people to just start being like, well, my day's going bad and this isn't going great. And at that point, you're like, well, this isn't, you know, I was kind of going to get to like, what drink do you want right after this? But they'll listen. They'll like be really receptive to what the person's having a hard day or not. Just being there for the customer and giving that experience. But, you know, I think that's kind of the other idea too, where it's like you have to give what they need in particular, and that's kind of what they're able to do for them.
Is that what you would say the Cat and Cloud guys were doing when you sort of observed them?
You know, I would say so, because I feel like for me it was just kind of like it didn't seem like it was their customers, it seemed like it was their family. Mm-hmm. You know, it was that type of service where you're like, what, hold on, he knows all their names. Like, you know, sometimes like you'll be working on bar and then your friend comes in and then you're like chatting them up. And some people are like, wow, this person has really great customer service. And you're just like, oh no, that's my friend. That's why, you know, but this was kind of like all his friends. This was like his customer base was all his friends, you know, and he was just chatting them up, knew their names, was asking how their kids were and really involved in their life. Like, Cat and Cloud is a part of people's life, and those people that come to Cat and Cloud to me seems like was part of their life. Mm-hmm. So I thought that was super like receptive. I was just like, I was just blown away by their customer service, and it led me from changing my mentality of like, if we serve only great coffee, we'll start like getting a bigger market share. To me, I was just like, all right, this is what it is. You know, you make them happy and they'll come back to you.
Okay, so I listened to your interview recently on Keys to the Shop, which was a really great podcast, and you guys discussed dark roast for a little while. What do you think makes a good dark roasted coffee?
I think for good dark roasted coffee, I think being able to cut through milk, having it hold up its flavor, I think great structure. You know, you can have a dark roasted thin coffee, and it'll just kind of be dark but no body, or you can have heavy body but it ends up being a little bit chalky, so the mouth feels a little too gritty and not as good. And you kind of find that balance, and you hopefully you end up something, you know, some nice rounded coffee. Depends if you want like brighter French roasted coffee, or if you just want it all really like brown, then a lower acid, high sweetness. But to me, for it, like, I think some of the tests that I would do myself personally, I would add milk to it and see what it tasted like. And so I would want to, you know, everyone talks about like, if you're going to make espresso, you taste it by making espresso. If you're going to make filter coffee, like you're going to roast filtered coffee, you should taste it in a filtered way, as opposed to just only doing cupping. That's somebody's mentality. And so to me, it's like French roast coffee is specifically for a consumer base that adds milk. And so if you're not going to consume it in the way that a consumer is going to want it, you know, we were doing this thing where we kept making our French roast a little bit lighter and lighter so it could be more and more nuanced. And we got some negative feedback from the people who drink this stuff all the time. And so it was like, oh, we made it taste better, so we enjoyed it, but we didn't really take in mind how do they prepare their coffee. And so this really ended up showing us that, you know, it's their drink. And so we should evaluate it as they would drink it.
I guess, how do you stay in touch with customers who are drinking those darker coffees? And how do you make sure that you're sort of roasting it the way they like?
You know, I feel the darker roasted market is kind of like a hugely ignored one. So, like, in all honesty, if you provide the coffee, you're probably already doing a lot better than a lot of roasteries. And so you don't really have to do much. You kind of just provide it for them, and then, you know, they'll let you know. I think the darker roasted community is a little bit more vocal with how they feel about their coffee. It's either too dark or too light or not enough, you know, this or that. So I think they'll let you know, as opposed to like the single origin market that, you know, if coffee's too acidic, their mentality is kind of like, you know what, maybe I don't understand this coffee. It's above my, like, it's above my pay grade. I don't get it. But if everyone else is drinking it, it must be a good coffee. They, you know, I feel the SO people kind of go with the flow, and the dark roasted people will let you actually know.
It's interesting. What, so we're thinking about switching from doing a light and a medium roast at Angel's Cup to doing more of like a beginner, intermediate, advanced. And the beginner one would focus on showcasing different roast profiles. But we've been sort of thinking about this for like 6 months or maybe more, but we really don't know how to taste dark roasted coffees very well. I feel like to me they kind of all taste the same or similar. What sort of like flavor notes do you look for? How would you separate a good from a bad dark roasted coffee?
A lot of times I'm kind of tasting chocolates. You know, depending on the coffee and the roast, but you kind of think of does this have a milk chocolate quality? So it'll be more sweetness with some bitter. So, you know, we'll say something like 60% milk chocolate. Once you start getting into like, all right, this is baker's chocolate, so I got some bitter with some dark chocolate notes, a little bit less maybe sweetness and overall like fullness. And then you end up like, this is baker's chocolate, so not a ton of sweetness and more bitter in it. And so I think tasting maybe dark chocolates, because if you've ever had like tried 70, 80, and 90% chocolate, you know, I used to be like, oh, I really love dark chocolate. And then I've tried 90%. I'm like, no, I went too far. And so I think that one's like a super indicator, just because you'll end up tasting 90% dark chocolate and be like, wow, this is like really bitter. And you don't understand bitters until you have them. And so I think that's kind of my mentality, where I just kind of think of chocolates. But instead of having like a whole nuanced field for tasting these coffees, I keep it simple. So I go sweetness, body, balance, and then some tasting notes. And like you said, the more you roast it, the more the tasting notes drop off. But you know, you can end up with, I feel those three descriptors kind of always like paint a good picture. So if it's sweet, good body, and, you know, balanced, I think that's kind of a good way to start. Flavor descriptors are probably going to be a little bit tougher just because you go too far and you end up with, like, rubber, burnt tire, medicinal. You end up with all these, like, really negative flavors, but, you know, you add milk to it and it maybe doesn't hurt it as much as drinking it straight. And so that's kind of like the really difficult part. But I feel like it's a really, it's a tough place to be trying to roast artisan French roast coffee and trying to get like really intense flavor notes. But, the flavor wheel does a good job, but I think it, you know, you go too far. I think you're looking at the faults now.
Yeah, I think it's really tough to taste the dark roast coffees. I can't get over like the hump of doing it because I feel like I'm so biased with light and medium roast coffees, and I'm so used to it that I just can't relate to the dark roast right now. And
yeah,
I'm pulling anything I could from like the cup. I don't know. So should we have a lower expectation on the sweetness for a dark roast coffee or?
Not necessarily. You know, if you select good coffee, sweet coffee, you can end up with a nice sweet roasted coffee. I think it's, it's a different mindset. That's kind of how I would describe it. You know, like we like what we like. And when it's time to taste some of our darker coffees, we're kind of like, this is the thing I don't like about tasting. And I used to be that way too, where I was just like, I hate tasting the French roast. I just don't like it. But something changed in me where I was just kind of like, I have to do it. Like I need to do it. For my consumers, you know, like what does that say when I'm serving something that I don't even want to drink?
Yeah.
And so I've learned to appreciate it just because our biggest sellers aren't our single origins. It's our medium dark and our three part blend of like a light, medium, dark, our Black Bart. And to me, I appreciate the customers wanting to drink it day after day, with huge wholesale counts, like buying a ton of it and basically like helping us continue our passion project, which is our single origin. And so to me, I was just, it's something I have to do. And I've actually learned to enjoy it. You know, I started off drinking like that stuff when my parents were drinking it, you know, like they'd go to diners and drink it and, you know, he had Folgers at home. And so it was just kind of like, I got spoiled by too much single origin. So I had to just learn to taste it, you know? So, you know, it's hard to say, but I think it's kind of one of those, you do it over and over again and you'll enjoy to do it.
Before our call got cut off, you mentioned something about bean density and how you're sort of selecting coffees with a high bean density for your dark roasts because it does something different. Can you talk about that?
Yeah. So a lot of times when you end up hearing me talk about different like roasting and techniques and reasons, you'll hear me talk about a lot of food science. So like sous vide or searing ahi versus medium rare steak. And so a lot of times I relate to some of these things. For example, single origin coffee is like a seared ahi tuna. You know, you just sear the outside of it and you're good to go. A medium roast, you know, it's kind of a little bit more of a medium well done steak. So you're letting the heat penetrate into the center. So it's not as pink, you know. And then when it comes to French roast, you're adding a lot of heat to it. And so if you have a denser bean, the center of it doesn't cook as much as the outside. And so it would be the equivalent of like, if I'm cooking a 6-inch steak, you're still going to have a little bit pink in the center or a little bit more raw in the center. And that rawness in coffee relates to characteristic of where it's coming from. And so you have a little bit of a
that origin character.
Yeah, the origin character, exactly. And so that thickness helps keep intact some of it. So you're able to roast the outside, but leave the inside a little raw. And so hopefully that raw inside has a little bit more sweetness, a little bit more characteristic. So maybe you'll get a French roast with a little bit of dried fruit on the finish, on the back end.
Which origins typically have the hardest beans? Or is that not origin specific?
I know that a lot of us are kind of using like Colombia. So Colombia, for some reason, they sort them out in different grades, and then they also sort them out in different densities. So you can buy a SHB, so strictly hard bean. You can find Guatemala, Colombia. You know, some of these places are specifically sorting for density, and you can use some of these coffees to do a little bit of a darker roast. You know, obviously, like everything, you roast it and you kind of see what you're left with in the coffee. And sometimes certain ones taste a little bit better than others, darker roasted. Or you can just even just develop it a little bit more, longer and better. And then you will almost leave a lot of the origin character out and just leave a lot of the body, milk chocolate, and kind of like you can manipulate it to just end up with something more classic instead of trying to leave it more nuanced. Mm-hmm. So it's like a lot of directions you can go with dark roast in particular.
So you mentioned that you've been in the coffee industry for 15 years. Who would you say you owe the most thanks to, and who's been your mentor?
I love everybody in particular. I wax over every, like, anything and everything, which I do quite often. I'm a huge thinker, not a doer, but a thinker. And a lot of times I always say we're a grouping of experiences that end up making us who we are. And without these experiences, we're not that person. And so to me, in the coffee industry in particular, I'm a collection of all the people that I've talked to's knowledge, and then I have my little twist on some of it. But like a lot of people that stand out, for example, when I went to the Worlds for Cup Tasters when I was flying to Budapest, and I had like a huge passport issue and I almost didn't even get to go to Budapest, I posted it up on Facebook, like all defeated and just being like, oh, I'm bummed out. Can't go. I guess I'm not going. And then everybody was just like, no, you can do this, you know, but like giving me hopes. And so a lot of people reached out to me, and it was interesting because at that point I was kind of like, Black Oak is going to the world for Cup Tasters. And then when it came down to it, a lot of people offered help, financial help, advice. And so at that point, it really hit me that I'm like, oh, I'm representing the coffee industry for the United States. And so a lot of, you know, that kind of made me feel really welcome in the industry. I always felt welcome, but I felt like for people to reach out from coffee shops that are like big names, I was just kind of like, all right, this is like super good, great movie moment if I made a movie. But as far as people that have given me great advice, Todd Goldworthy from Clatch Coffee in Rancho Cucamonga, so Southern California. Mm-hmm. Samuel from Keffa Coffee, another person. He gave me like great advice during the cupping competition.
What was the advice?
He basically just kind of told me to relax, taste, just kind of gave me through what he's gone through. Because at that point, he'd been there, I believe, 5 times.
Oh, wow.
And so it was just, you know, he could have just said nothing. He could have just left me alone. And, you know, who knows how things would have turned out. But he just kind of, you know, gave me some advice about just taking my time and, you know, It was just super cool. He also gave me a spoon that I use exclusively. So the Keffa Coffee spoon, I'm just kind of it's my good luck one, and I keep it in my locker and out of anyone else's hands.
That's funny.
You know, another person that's come to me this year is Mark from Onyx Coffee Labs.
Mm-hmm.
Another huge person. Like, we haven't talked a lot of shop, but I know that he's that person that I can, and if I need, I can.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's another person I look up to, in particular Onyx Coffee Lab. They're just crushing it. I look up to them a lot just for who they are. And then the other exciting part is, like, they're from Arkansas, you know? And so
I'm just making a stink face right now because we haven't shipped them yet.
Oh, yeah.
He's making a stink face.
There's a logistical conflict with regards to their coffee, so it's tough for us to ship them in our flights. But we have tried their coffees, and they're really good.
Oh, yeah. They're awesome. They're awesome people. I got to travel Brazil with them, so that was kind of like super amazing. I was with Dylan, Mark, Andrea, John. So it was just kind of like it was super awesome. All the U.S. and like all the U.S. and a lot of some of the world coffee champions, and it was just kind of like super great time.
If you could put in a good word for us, that would be appreciated.
For them?
No, they want us to feature them, but the problem is there's a lag between when we get when it's roasted and when we get the coffees in the mail, and then when we ship them out to customers.
They're concerned about their coffee not being fresh when it arrives to our customers.
Yeah.
And they don't want those our customers to have a bad impression of their coffee because of that.
Yeah, they blow my mind. They're just super awesome people. But yeah, both of you guys working together would be another like one of those dream projects.
The what?
Oh, both of you two working together would be like a dream project. They've done some awesome.
Yeah, and I was really excited too when we tried their coffee. So I was like, oh my god, they're so good. We have to ship these.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's just shipping coffee is tough too, like especially for us. Our customers are really involved with like when the roast date of the coffees are and when they get it. So the logistics
are
tricky.
Well, I know they did like Barista Hustle one, and I know every time I get a Barista Hustle one, it's always like 3 weeks out. You know, like it's coming from, I don't know, like Hong Kong or something is where all my tracking starts. So it's always interesting. But I'm like, they nitrous flush it. So it's just kind of like, I don't know why, you know, it's interesting too. Dylan won the Brewers Championship with like coffee that was eight months old.
Oh my God.
That wasn't even in a CO2 vacuum bag or like flesh bag. So I was just kind of like, it seems a little weird that they'd be like, it needs to be fresh.
Yeah, we actually usually sample our coffees about 14 days off roast. And I think roast dates are the most not overrated, but they're the most over-focused on thing.
Yes.
I think it's very quantitative. You say, okay, this coffee is exactly 3 days off roast. That means it's good. I think people are less likely, especially when they're sort of new to it, to trust their taste buds.
Yeah.
So it's hard to get over that, huh?
Well, we're right now they're going to be dropping some interesting speeches, and like it was we had a discussion from a scientist for I'm trying to think of for Nestle, I believe, that does their like coffee science stuff, and he gave like a really amazing speech about like freshness in quotations, because their discussion was as coffee keeps giving off CO2, it's still considered fresh. And so if they were able to measure the amount of CO2 being released in coffee throughout like a huge different like nitrous flush bags. Like if you store it for a year and then you open it up, is it still fresh? The answer was yes, but it depletes its CO2 faster. So if I ground coffee now, it would last longer than if I ground it a year from now, but it would open the bag, it would be fresh. And so the discussion is, how we view freshness and how we've thought of freshness is not entirely correct. But, you know, you got to give props to a company like Blue Bottle that made everybody feel that if your coffee wasn't roasted today, it's trash. and now they don't even do it. But they started that market trend. And it was just kind of like, you see how trends end up working out for certain companies. And now they're not about it. Mm.
Yeah, and I think coffees taste the best, I want to say, like 10 days off roast, maybe 14. Like, it really gets all the flavors out at that point.
Yeah, I think, and you know, like, this is, like, as baristas are listening to this, they go like, I've been knowing that. You know, you give... The worst thing to do is be a barista and get coffee and be like, when was this roasted? Yesterday.
Now I gotta wait.
Yeah. You have the worst time dialing in. And, like, no one really knew why, but all the CO2 that's being produced pushes water away from it or from outside of its pores. And so as you try to pour water into it, it's pushing CO2 out of it. And so the fresher it is, the more that happens. And so the less you're able to fully extract a coffee. So that's why, like, French roast in particular has more CO2. So French roast would probably taste better around, like, 15 days out. It tastes less, sometimes a little less vivid, but more fully extracted, more nuanced. Single origin, same thing. Like, you might enjoy, like, 6 to 8 days after roast. But everybody has this, like, it has to be fresh. That's why people rest coffee now, you know? Like, if I'm going to – for our espresso bar, we have it, you know, we roast before we need it so it can have a few days of rest. And so it just helps with better extraction.
Yeah.
Agreed. So what's next on your list of things to achieve in the coffee industry?
Things to achieve, you know? I'm not sure. You know, I open up Barista Magazine and I look at the back of it and then I just go, I want to enter everything. You know what? I just figured it out. Barista competition. The SEA made these cool little pins and they like represent each competition. And so I ended up buying myself the brewers, the roasters, and the cup tasters little pin. The enamel pin, and I bought my coworkers, like I bought John and Tom and Keith, all their pins to the competition they've were in, because I thought, I'm like, you know, it's kind of like a little bit of a merit badge of sorts. And so to me, the next final step is the barista one, which terrifies me, but I feel that's my next one. With it, you know, also doing better at brewers and roasters, but in, you know. I think barista would be the next step of something I haven't done.
That's a big one.
Yes.
All right. So we're getting sort of into the closing segment here. I read when I was doing some research that you dropped out of high school.
Yeah.
And then you later went on to earn your GED. Can you tell us about what happened?
All right. So let me put it this way. I don't think when I say I dropped out, it sounds like I had a choice in the matter. I was kicked out. I kept failing English classes. If you've ever seen anything I've written, you'll see why. Mm-hmm. Horrible grammar, bad spelling. I'm not that person. But I kept failing, like I failed English class my first 3 years in high school. Everything else I did fine, computer graphicing. I was doing good in math, algebra, and all that. But English, I was just so bored by it. I hate reading. Reading is like really, like, I love informational pamphlets. If you got like a pamphlet that like explain how an engine works, I'll read that. But you want to like give me a book and a story with a plot line? I'm like, that is the most boring thing I'll ever do. And so I would never do book reviews. I would never do any of that. And so I ended up failing the first 3 years. And by the fourth one, I was like, you know, I don't think you can pass high school without ever passing those classes. And so I ended up being sent to a continuation school. And when I went to the continuation school, I they gave me work for different fields that they were doing, and one of them was math, but they put me in remedial math. And so I would finish the math and I'd be like, I'm done with like a full week's work of work. And they were like, oh, well, the way that this works is you do an amount of time and that's how you get credit. And then I was just like, you know, I feel like I'm in prison, not to like make, you know, obviously that's a lot more worse. But my thought was, this is time-based, not education-based. And so to me, the continuation was just kind of like, this is not the way to go. So I dropped out, just moved to San Francisco. And, you know, I didn't think about school. School to me wasn't really helping build critical thinking. It was just kind of like, do your lesson plan and follow orders. And to me, that was just kind of the least that, you know, at that point in my life, I was listening to a lot of like punk rock music. So I was like, listening and following the orders is not what you're going to be able to get me to do. And so I ended up just dropping out and going to San Francisco and having an amazing time. You know, during that time, I was like 19, turning 20. And so I had a lot of savings because I started working at about like 15 or so. And so I didn't have to work for the next 2 years. And so I was able to hang out in San Francisco for like 2.5 years without working. And so I had a super fun time. At one point I got back into the work industry. I started working at this small cafe or a chain of cafes called Specialty Coffee. Mm-hmm. And I ended up just, you know, I was just like, well, I don't know. I'm bored. I'll get my GED. It was just something to do. You know, At the time I had my partner was super encouraging. And so she was just kind of, yeah, if you feel like it, go for it. And so I did, and I didn't study for it. I just signed up for the test and then I just nailed it. And I was like, oh, nice. So like years later I got it, but you know, I didn't really feel any different. I didn't feel, you know, the not needing to prepare anything. I was just like, oh, all right. It was always accessible. And then the worst part of it was then I go and find out that you could test out of high school at 15 and a half. You know, you can take that exact test and get out of high school and start college.
Wow. God, I wish I knew that.
I didn't know that either. And then I was kind of like,
is that a state specific thing or is that a national thing?
You know, I'm speaking of California in particular, but yeah, I don't know what any of the other rules were, but I was just kind of like, we're not, if the youth that is learning is already past high school education, you should be able to go to your higher learning, your higher education. But if you don't know that, you're like, well, you know, I guess it was on my parents to know that, but
yeah,
I don't know. It
now
was,
I feel like I was a sheep for reading all that Charles Dickens. Son of a bitch.
Yeah. But you know, to me, high school, instead of it being a teaching tool for what they wanted me to read and educate myself with the different things that they had, their curriculum, to me it was more of a, like, the way I viewed it was, it was like a huge socializing project to me. And so I learned to socialize. And so I really credit school for having the gift of gab. And so without it, you won't be able to talk to a bunch of different types of people. And so to me, it was just kind of like, at the minimum, I got to learn to socialize. And I really appreciate that factor of high school.
I think that is one of the more important things about high school is learning how to socialize with people. That's like the fondest memories that people have about high school is hanging out with their friends and, you know.
It's also people's least fond memories of high school.
You know, I was just going
to
say that.
To talk to people.
I know. I do the same thing too, because I'd be like, oh man, I really like loved high school. It was like super fun. Like, but you know what? Like, I loved it because I knew I was failing after my second year of high school. And so I had fun with it. I can do whatever I wanted. That attitude, I didn't like, for me, it wasn't a focus. It wasn't like, you need to do this or you're not going to get in college. And if you don't get in college, you won't be something successful.
Yeah.
to me, I was already like, well, I'm doomed. Might as well make the best of it. And so I just had fun with it. But then, you know, you hear other people and they have the stresses of like, I need to get straight A's, 4.0s. Yeah. Like, I need to become something. Or, you know, maybe I'm being picked on and that you know, you can have a lot of negative routes in high school. To me, it was just kind of like, oh, I never thought of that.
Yeah, but it's cool, though, that you had that kind of awareness at that age where, oh, school might not be something for me, that something else is probably going to work out for you much better than doing, like, the monotonous schoolwork.
Yeah, good self-awareness. You
know? Yeah.
And so that led to your first job in coffee, right?
Yeah, I credit the music telling me don't listen to things. And I was like, all right, I should listen to this song, but not to anything else. But, you know, like,
what was your anthem?
Yeah, I was going to say the other interesting thing, too, is that, like, now that I talk to a lot of people, I'm not actively trying to discourage people from going to college, but then I'm always just kind of like, just letting you know, there's a lot of people in the coffee industry with college degrees, and, you know, feel free to go to college. I'll be right here, though, to greet you back.
That's a good segue into our next set of questions. So what advice do you have for people who are sort of navigating a coffee-related career path?
You know, that to me, that's kind of like one of the biggest questions that we don't know how to answer for our fellow coworkers. How do you get to where you are? How does someone become, you know, whatever you want to add in there? And that one's like the hardest one to talk about, because a lot of times the SEA did some talks. I know Alexandra Littlejohn gave a speech. There was a lot of different people that talked upon this subject. And what you ended up taking from it was, it's who you know, it's what you do, it's what you can do. There is no path. I'm like, oh man, that's some like Confucius things right there. Like, you know, there is no path. And so to me, it was just kind of like, I lucked out because I was able to see where Black Oak could be. I saw that they roasted and I saw that they were doing great coffee, and they had no outlets to San Francisco. They were just starting, so they were really trying to focus on doing all their things and getting things right. And so I was able to see this smaller company and be like, there's room for advancement. And, you know, down the line, there's room for growth. And so if they get bigger and bigger, then there's going to be more better positions. A lot of times you may want to be at those big flagship coffee houses, like, because they already have the names and the titles, but you have no room for advancement. You're going to end up being, you know, maybe you'll be turned into a barista educator and this or that. But if you see a small coffee shop that's just starting to roast, or just, you know, like, but you got to put in the time. To me, it was just kind of like, I've been willing for, the, you know, 15 years on and off to put in the time and do the work. And I think
probably be to look for a small shop over a big one. And
yeah, and just do for the company what you know, do right by them, and hopefully they'll do right by you.
Sounds like solid advice.
Yeah. What?
Nothing. We work for a small company.
Yep.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, send applications too.
Yeah.
So what do you think is the simplest thing people could do to improve their palate?
And so this harks back to Todd Goldworthy. He was my instructor at the barista camp.
Mm-hmm.
I think my first year, maybe my second year, I'm not sure, but Todd Goldsworthy gave me like really great advice. And it was super simple. It was taste thoughtfully. That's it. You know, I've said this to a bunch of different people. I even have, Tom, my coworker, you know, fellow roaster, whenever he's talking to people, like in instructing and training people, he'll use that same line. And so what Todd told me has imparted something on him where it was taste thoughtfully. You know, anything you're eating, drinking has a flavor, and always think about what those flavors are. And, you know, it has a level of sweetness. It has a level of body. You know, it has a maybe it might have a mouthfeel, like it's chalky, grainy. So anything you're doing that has flavor, just think about it. You know, to me, drinking whiskeys, wine, eating at really nice restaurants where you want to savor the food and not just, you know, chow down on it, have all helped for me to kind of be like more in tune with what I'm tasting. I would feel like 4 years ago, I feel like I was just eating and it was, you know, it was a pass or fail. If you weren't grossed out by it, it passed. And at that point, you know, Top Ramen could pass and like, you know, different fast food places passed. And now like I'm at a, like I taste while thinking that I'm like, oh, you know, I eat some of the stuff that I ate as a kid and I'm like, wow, this is not good.
Well, I think that's because some of those recipes have changed. I swear that that fruit roll-ups, when I was a kid, strawberry fruit roll-ups had strawberry seeds in it. There must have been real strawberry in there.
Oh, no, this is the Mandela effect.
Is it?
No, I'm just kidding. It did. I believe that too. I mean, I might be biased though, but I remember that too. Like it had a little texture in it.
Yeah, and now it doesn't anymore, and I think it's totally artificial. I think some things taste worse because they actually are made less well.
No, I, you know, that's a great point too. And you're able to pick up on it, you know, like, I think it'd be interesting if there's like, I don't know if there's a black market where we can go and buy some old school fruit roll-ups. And
I think they do. There's a website that sells like old school candies.
Nice. Throwback candy Thursday.
And I'm sure they have the old fruit roll-up somewhere over there.
Yeah, they're like, we can't sell them because of the expiration date, but we take donations, wink, wink. Yeah, I mean, but, you know, being able to pick that up, I think, is another, you know, another kudos because you're able to, like, taste something and be like, wait a minute, something's off, you know?
I think, though, that if you go to a good high-end restaurant that thinks about what they're serving – that probably is a good exercise because the food that they give you are usually unusual or they enhance like the taste in some way. Like that's like an interesting way to exercise your palate.
Yeah. Like I think an interesting one was if you've never had like Wagyu beef,
yeah,
you know, like, expensive, most people might not get the pleasure or, you know, to try that out. Or for example, there's a ham that's made in Spain where the pig only gets fed acorns. And like, you know, that it says it imparts flavor onto the meat. And so I think there's, you know, certain things that are interesting out there that you need to really taste, you know, 3 month dried or 3 month aged steak is another one where you're like, it is not the same thing as a fresh steak. So that's interesting, you know, different cheeses. Cheeses is kind of the easier one too, because it's a little bit more accessible and it won't be as expensive or hard to find, but you know, different cheeses is a definite, like, you know, cheese flavors come from different bacteria. And so like, you're able to taste a little bit of like the nuance of cheese.
Yeah.
Jeff has a hard time with cheese, though. Well, softer cheese.
Yeah, I'm not a huge soft cheese fan. I like the hard cheese, though.
Yeah.
But we've been doing more and more wine.
Yes.
To kind of just see how that experience would be for us and how similar it would be to coffee. There's so many different regions for wine and so many just types, and it's so hard.
Yeah. The varietal one is that blew my mind. Like my favorite wine shop or my favorite wine bar just closed down and they have this poster of all these varietals. And I was just like, oh, I like being in California, I'm like, we've only scratched the surface of what varietals they are. You know, they have the big ones. And so they end up producing large like Syrahs and all these like standard ones. And then I see this poster and I'm like, I am not even at 1% of tasting all these varietals. Yeah. And it just, you know, it just, it defeated me, but it also kind of was like, all right, I need to, you know, taste more obviously. But I think, you know, like what's another interesting thing to do is lactic acid coffees. If you've ever had those, that's something different too, because you've had like honey, natural, washed, and now lactic acid coffee is coming on the scene, and it's a different experience for me too.
I only had one, and that was like a year ago.
We've had a couple of them.
A couple?
I don't think we shipped them, but Mod Cup gave us some lactic acid coffees.
Yeah, 90 Plus does a lot with it too.
Oh, okay.
And then there's the World Roaster Champion, just like for the barista hustle, he sent out a coffee with like lactic acid process. Oh, it like I described it as a dessert coffee.
Interesting.
It was like super winey, like a heavy wine with like cherry in it, like nice sweetness, heavy body. It was super awesome. It was kind of like the equivalent of like a port,
yeah.
Like a dessert port. So, but it changes the flavor. So if you're like, all right, you know, I'm pretty good with tasting coffee, start tasting lactic acid coffees. And so then you'll be able to add some more tasting notes to your palate just because it's not the same. It's a little bit different.
Yeah.
And so, you know, some people don't like it, but.
You guys should roast them and ship them to us.
Oh, okay. I know this competition we were talking to, 90 plus, and it didn't logistically work out because we had to have it all shipped out from Panama. And by the time it would get here, it'd be like after the competition. But yeah, we were looking at some of that coffee. We ended up talking to Steve and trying to see if something could work out, but it hasn't and it didn't. I think Onyx Coffee has one now. I think it's one of their Colombias. I might be wrong on that though, but a lot of countries are trying it out. You know, they're open to it. So I think I've heard of some Colombias and some other countries doing it.
Cool. Oh, you know, one of our roasters said that he is really enjoying your notes, your tasting notes on their coffees. From our tasting flight. He's like, oh yeah, Steve, I really like his notes on our coffees. He's really nice.
Nice. Oh, my notes on their coffee or our notes
notes on their coffee from your Angels Cup flight.
Oh, nice. Who was this?
Little Amps.
Oh yeah. I loved it. I was blown away.
Those coffees were really good.
And it came with a pen and a sticker. I'm not saying that influenced me, but it I really love that coffee. It blew my mind. Like, it's always fun to flip that card over and be like, whether you know, I'm pretty sure we guessed one of those coffees right. I think it was like a natural Ethiopia. I can't remember at the moment right now, but like when you flip that card over and you're like, oh, I was right. And then your next thing you look at where it's from, see if your guess was right. Then you look up about like above it and see who's it from is your next question. And then you look over and be like, what are the tasting notes? And so that's kind of the order we go. And then after that, we read the little info underneath that, but it's always super awesome. And the main reason they were on my radar too was I believe they just won Chicago, or the one in the East Coast. They just won America's Best Espresso.
Oh, yeah.
And so it was super fun to see them win and then to taste their coffee or one of their coffees. I don't think that's what they used, though. I ended up reaching out to them.
Yeah, those two coffees from that flight are sold out. Like, they're gone.
Yeah, I can see that.
It's like, oh yeah, it just like flew off the shelves. I was like, well.
Was that before we shipped it or after?
It was after we shipped it.
Nice.
Because they're all stars.
Oh,
the coffee was all star, both of them, and I couldn't ship it because it's gone.
We couldn't ship them.
It's interesting whenever you taste like really like this competition season. Like the first year we won the two gold medals in the Golden Bean, we had some solid coffees. It was like Natural Ethiopia Banco, and unfortunately, I'm really blanking on the name of the second one, but like that one really stood out in my mind. And whenever you know, like this second year, we ended up getting a lot of silvers and bronze for our coffee, but we had an overall higher score. So we ended up winning the overall Golden Bean. But this year, like doing the competition coffee selection for John's Brewers routine, I was scoring some coffees like back in the day. Like anything that I would have said was an 87 to 88. Yeah. Back in the day, after tasting some of these fresh coffees from some of these awesome people that ended up hooking us up, I was like, no, those 87, 88s that I tasted back, those are 85s and 86 now. And now I've tasted an 88, you know? And so my scoring lexicon is always being shifted by better coffee, newer coffee, fresher coffee. And so when you taste something like really fresh and vivid, you're blown away, and that's kind of how I feel about Little Amp's coffee.
You guys' Becco is always good.
Yeah, we always wait for, like, there's certain coffees that we're always like, oh, they're coming online.
Because you have it every year, right?
We look at it. This year, it kind of lost out to the Celelectu.
Oh, to the Celelectu, yeah. So this year, we'll be Celelectu.
But they end up having the same flavor profile, so it was just kind of like, it's not a huge difference. The Banca was more intense and vivid, I would say, but the Celelectu was kind of more of it's a lower intensity cousin is what I would describe it,
because they both scored really high with our subscribers, like I believe like the past 2 years.
Yeah,
those two coffees have been all-stars too. And I thought it was, maybe it was the Banco that was always a higher scoring one.
Yeah, it definitely was for me. So I'm assuming it probably was.
All right, my friend, one last question before we go. What is the single simplest thing that someone can do to have a better overall coffee experience?
The simplest thing to do it better.
Like for themselves, or you mean coming from?
It's an open-ended question. Can go either way.
You know, I feel have a nice little dialogue with the baristas, whoever's working there. It's always worked out for me. Like I end up asking one question, it leads to another question. I ask them about their coffee. So like I would say, like walk up to the counter and be like, oh, like what's your favorite coffee? Oh, like what are you into? And maybe they'll show that you're interested, and then they'll take a shining to the questions and be like, this person's really interested in coffee. And so I'll make it a point to help them out, walk them through the different coffees and explain what they may or may not like and give them an experience that they're looking for. So, you know, always being curious and inquisitive to the baristas that are there, I think would really help out. Obviously, that's with a caveat. If they're completely slam and trying to start a 20-minute conversation is not the way to go. But if it's not heavily busy, I always start a conversation about just whatever coffee nonsense it is that I, you know, I want to kind of let them know I'm into coffee without telling them that I work for coffee.
All right. I think that's it for today. Before we go, do you want to tell our listeners where they can find you and or Black Oak online?
So April 19th through April 22nd, I'm going to be in Seattle at the U.S. Cup Tasters Championship. You can find me there. We'll be at the convention center. You know, you can find me on Instagram, Dreadful Vegan. Also, my email, steve@blackoakcoffee.com. Feel free to reach out. I'm always open to answering questions, talking about anything in particular.
Great, yeah. Instagram, by the way. I highly recommend everyone follow it. It's fun.
Oh, it gets goofy at points.
It's the right kind of goofy.
Yes.
All right, Steve. Thanks so much. We really appreciate you joining us.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Yeah.
For our resurrection episode.
All right, thank you. The jungle VIP. I've reached the top and had to stop, and that's what's bothering me. I want to be a man cub, and stroll right into town, and be just like the other men. I'm tired of walking around. Oh,
okay, everybody, that's it for this episode of the Angels Cup Coffee Hunters podcast. I hope you enjoyed and learned something new from Steve. I know I did. I found it particularly insightful when he was discussing about the time he met the folks from Cat and Cloud Coffee. They definitely have a tremendous following, and it's well deserved. They also have a podcast you might want to check out. If you search for Cat and Cloud, I'm sure you'll find it. Our next guest, I believe, is going to be Jessica Du. Jessica is the founder of Palm Press Coffee, which is a brewing device that I guess it would be best described as something similar to the AeroPress, but a little bit sleeker and more stylish, and I think it's more user-friendly. I know with the AeroPress, I tend to squirt water out the sides somehow and burn my hands a lot. That hasn't happened yet with the Palm Press. So we're going to have her on the show, and we're going to learn about what it takes to build a business, designing a product, manufacturing a product, and marketing it in the United States. So if you haven't already done so, we hope you'll click subscribe, and remember to check out that episode when it comes out. We have a few more guests lined up for this year, but I don't want to spoil the surprise just yet. As always, this podcast is brought to you by Angels Cup Coffee. Angels Cup is an online tasting club where our subscribers get to sample up to 208 coffees every single year. Our mission is to help people develop a sharper sense of taste, and I don't think there's any other service out there in any industry, coffee, whiskey, wine, beer, that helps you develop a sharper sense of taste the way Angels Cup does, with blind tastings and an app to record notes and compare tasting notes with other members of our community and the barista. If you're interested in subscribing, please visit angelscup.com. Tasting flights start at only $10 a month, which is it's the best we could do. That's it for today. Again, I hope you enjoyed, and I hope to see you back again soon. Bye-bye.